Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and I'm talking with the chairman of our Republican Party, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. Steve, welcome to the program. We want to get right to it because we have a lot of things coming up in this program. We have some special guests that will be calling in, and we also want to talk about how Joe Biden magically won. Tell us about this article in The Federalist.
The article came out in The Federalist by J.B. Shirk on November 23rd, and it talks about five ways that Joe Biden magically outperformed election norms. Number one, he got 80 million votes. That's almost 10 million votes more than Barack Obama got. And it suggests that maybe Barack Obama was not the pull on the ticket, that people were actually excited about Joe Biden. And so getting 10 million more votes than Barack Obama did. President Trump got 70 million votes. He got 10 million more votes than he got last time and still lost the race. So that's the first thing. The second item that is pointed out in this article is that he lost most of the bellwether counties and states. Joe Biden will become the first president in 60 years to lose both Ohio and Florida on his way to election. For a century, these states have consistently predicted the national outcome. He lost Ohio by 8 points and Florida by more than 3 points. And so you have to wonder how he won, even when he lost the bellwether counties and states. One of the bellwether counties for the entire country is Valencia County, and he lost pretty badly in Valencia County here in New Mexico. And so that's listed as one of his magical moments. The next magical moment is that he trailed Clinton's results in almost all the major cities. Keep in mind that Clinton and the Democrats, Biden, they expect to win only a few of the states, but they expect to win many, many of the large towns, cities where the left is more admired than it is across the entire nation. And so Biden very much underperformed Clinton in all of those counties across the state. The fourth way that Biden won, despite Democrats losing in almost every other way, the Republicans did not lose one seat in the House of Representatives in Washington, and in fact have picked up now 13 seats away from the Democrats. They're on the way to picking up 14th, maybe as many as 16 or 17 seats. Still a lot of recounts going in about 8 or 10 of the races. And so Joe Biden lost there and still won the presidency, and so you have to ask that. With the press declaring that Trump is the loser, it will be the first time, I think, ever in American history that a president has gained seats in the House of Representatives and yet lost his own reelection. It just doesn't make sense in one of the ways that Mr. Shirk is calling this magical. The fifth way is that Biden overcame Trump's commanding primary lead. So many people were excited about President Trump, and no one was showing up to any of the Biden events. And there was no enthusiasm for him at all. And yet somehow he magically turned out millions more voters in this election than what Barack Obama did in his first election. And so those things need to be talked about. Now, the next thing I want our listeners to hear is part of an interview that Dick Morris does. And he's talking about the changes in the Supreme Court and then the reassignment to the court positions. Listen as Dick Morris talks.
Every Supreme Court justice is assigned a circuit court, the court right under the Supreme Court, to supervise and to conduct the motion practice. In other words, when you move for something, in this case in Pennsylvania, it was to insist that there be inspectors present. It doesn't go to the full Supreme Court. It goes to one of the justices who's in charge of that circuit. He can refer it to the court, or he can make the decision himself. Now, each justice is assigned a circuit, and they have a lot of power within that circuit. And yesterday, the Supreme Court reassigned the circuit court coverage of its justices. It did it because Barrett just joined the court, and they had to revamp the assignments in view of her inclusion. The important thing is that every one of the contested states, except Arizona, is in a circuit run by a Trump-appointed judge. And I don't mean Roberts, I mean a real conservative. So that all cases coming before the circuit court about Wisconsin go to Amy Coney Barrett. Cases about Michigan go to Brett Kavanaugh. Cases about Pennsylvania go to Alito. And cases about Georgia go to Clarence Thomas. The only negative thing is Kagan has jurisdiction over cases in Arizona. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to win in the Supreme Court, but it does mean it will be much easier for us to get to the Supreme Court. because when you go before a circuit court and you make a motion, that motion, procedural motion, will not be heard for the most part by the entire court, circuit court, but by the specific Supreme Court judge, justice assigned to that court. This is a very important and very encouraging development.
So the next thing that the nation faces are those two special elections in Georgia, the runoff elections. It's unusual to have two senators running in a single state any time because usually they're on alternating terms. But to have them both in a runoff in what is going to be a special election, January the 5th, is amazing. With the results right now in the Senate being 50 Republicans and 49 Democrats, if the Republicans win one seat, they'll maintain control of the Senate. If the Democrats win both seats, then they'll maintain control of the Senate with a 50-50 tie in which Kamala Harris will just cast the deciding vote on every single vote in the Senate. And so the stakes are extremely big in Georgia and nationwide. We have seen people stepping up to help both sides in this election. So a lot is playing out there. So as we close out this first segment, Derek, just want to mention that the governor's staff seems to be a little tense about people talking whether or not she's doing the right thing. She, of course, goes to the red, yellow, and green system in performing counties. And then the spokesperson says, "I hope that you will hold Republicans accountable for this decision." Well, to tell you the truth, you can't blame Republicans for this decision because they waited from March till now to implement it. We were saying in March that that she should have done this by county, that she should maybe have quarantined heavy infection areas of the state. But instead, she locked down all 33 counties, has destroyed much of the economy. And so now then to come along in November, 8, 9, 10 months later, and declare suddenly we're doing what the Republicans want to do, that doesn't quite fly. But I'm amazed at how thin-skinned that the governor's office seems to be becoming right now as they mismanage from one problem to another in this state, still seeing kids shut out of school, still seeing our jobs dissipate, the pay going down every day, people struggling, and now she's trying to find scapegoats for that. So we'll talk more with Senator Baca in the third section about that. But Derek, looking forward to the interviews with both Jim Townsend and Greg Baca, who are the minority leaders in the state legislature for the next 2 years.
Jim Townsend, the minority leader of the House of Representatives in New Mexico, will be Steve's guest next on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. We are talking with Steve Pierce, the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, and Steve has a guest on the phone.
Well, Derek, as we told you in the first segment, we're joined today with a special friend of mine, a special guest, Jim Townsend. He's the minority leader in the House of Representatives. Just won re-election in that position. So 2 more years, he'll be leading the caucus there as they meet and uphold the Republican values in the state legislature. And Republican values are going to be few and far between. We have seen the Democrats systematically get rid of all the conservative Democrats in their caucus in both the House and the Senate. Welcome, Jim, to the program.
Thanks, Steve. I'm always glad to share this space with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, let's recap the election a little bit. You made some gains, and tell us about the gains and losses that you saw during this election cycle.
Well, I guess in any election cycle, you never get all the gains that you wanted, but I am happy to report that every one of our incumbents won their seats and they're back in the House. And we also picked up one new seat, Luis Terrazas, over on the west side. Silver City picked up a seat from Rudy Martinez, and we're glad to welcome him into the House. On top of that, Stephanie Lord in the East Mountains won a hard-fought race. She was outspent probably 3.5-1. She won the seat that had been held by Dr. Smedes. And we're tickled to death also with Randy Pettigrew from Hobbs, also ran unopposed, and we were able to protect the seat that had been held by Representative David Gallegos, who now moves on to the Senate with Dr. Smedes, and both of those will be new senators. And we're always tickled to death to have more friends in the New Mexico Senate.
Okay, so step aside from the election for a moment and tell me some of the high points of this election season.
Well, I think there were several high points. Anytime you go through an election cycle, you're always looking over your shoulder for things you wished you had done different or had a different opportunity. But I would tell you that winning those seats was a combination of several things. Number one, I think for the first time, if not ever in a long time, we had the New Mexico Senate leadership, the New Mexico House, and the state party working hand in hand all through the election cycle. And I can't think of a single argument that got out of hand. I was and am proud of the fact that we worked together. We came under a simple but yet profound theme, Respect New Mexico. I think it will live on in the new election cycles. And I think the fact that we were able to put a team together of 10 highly qualified young Republicans eager to help. We put more than 100 candidates in the field. Many of them are ready to come back and run again and are running for other positions within the state party, local elections, and local parties. But, you know, I think the excitement that I had was we had active participation by some very good candidates who are dedicated to making New Mexico better. And they have shown that by the fact that even though some of them were defeated, they are already putting their teams together, learning from the mistakes that they made, and they're going to come back and run again. And they will be better candidates. And quite frankly, they will be successful when they come back and run a different time.
We also had such a diverse group of candidates from the beginning in our primary. We had Native American men and women. We had Hispanic men and women. We had 4 black candidates, both male and female, running in this cycle for a state representative or a state senate. I'm just telling you that the diversity of the party has probably taken the biggest leap in decades.
You're exactly right. And we had, I think, the best field of candidates that I've ever seen. Paula and I traveled, just like you and Cynthia did, all over the state. And I was constantly amazed with the quality and the dedication of all of the men and women across the state that were interested in one thing, and they were dedicated to the fact that they wanted to make New Mexico better. They wanted us not to be 50th in education. They wanted us not to be 49th in place to retire. They didn't want us to be, I think, 48th or 49th in the state that does a horrible job of deploying capital for New Mexicans' betterment. You know, we have 20% of our seniors that live in poverty. They locked on to the fact that we had been last for nearly 100 years, and it was time we changed. And they became dedicated to the fact that they weren't playing politics so much as they just wanted to make New Mexico better. And when you have people that come together of all different race, creeds, religions, whatever, when you have those people all come together and they want to make New Mexico better, they'll win in the end. You just watch, because of that 101 candidates, they represent and carry the message for 2 million people across New Mexico. And I'm just certain that there's not anyone listening today that doesn't wish New Mexico provided better jobs, better opportunities. Our education was better. Our seniors didn't live in poverty. Everybody wants our state to be better. And so we're working tirelessly toward that, and we'll be successful because it's the right thing to do.
So you're called into special session on the spur of the moment. Tell us a little bit about that session that occurred early last week.
Well, it was a one-day session. Many things, I will tell you, had talked about the speaker and the governor's office and the leadership of both houses early on, tried to work together to put a bill out that strengthened New Mexico because there's so many hurting. In the end, from my point of view, it wasn't a perfect bill. I voted for the bill because it was more good than bad. Our caucus was split, I think, 13-12-11 or 13-11. I don't remember exactly, but the bill really had about 5 real big points. It was $194 million of this $335 million bill that went for $1,200 one-time payment for unemployment benefits. There was about $100 million that was for a small business grant. There was $5 million set aside for, really, it was for illegal aliens residing in the state to help them with some low-income assistance. $15 million, DFA to provide emergency housing. There was some food bank stuff, I think $5 million in there for that. But everyone in the legislature, regardless of which side of the aisle you were sitting on, was in agreement that New Mexico is hurting. And we're hurting not only because of the pandemic, but because of the measures that the governor has used to address the pandemic. That has caused a lot of unemployment. I know in many of those instances, she thinks she's done it for the right reasons. The legislature understood and agreed that there was much pain in New Mexico. We argued on the reasons, but we agreed that we had to do something. Most all of this money is CARES Act money, so deploying it into households that was hurting was something that I think it was like 56, 57 members of the House voted in favor of. So I was happy to support it. It wasn't perfect, but it was a better bill than the first time I saw it. I think we were on about rendition 10 or 11 in the end, and it was a better bill, and it was one that needed to pass, in my opinion.
Friends, we've been listening and talking with Jim Townsend. He's the minority leader in the House of Representatives in Santa Fe. Again, Representative Townsend, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you very much.
Steve Pierce will be talking to State Senator Greg Baca, the new minority leader in the state Senate, coming up on Inside New Mexico.
On behalf of the New Mexico Department of Health, take COVID-19 precautions. Wash your hands frequently for 20 seconds. Don't touch your face. Use a tissue or your elbow to catch your sneeze or cough. Avoid large gatherings and close contact with sick people, especially if you are elderly or high risk. If you have a cough, fever, or shortness of breath, stay home from work or school. Do not go to the ER or doctor's office without first calling the coronavirus hotline. And avoid all unnecessary out-of-state travel. Help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. I'm back with Steve Pearson, our next guest.
Well, as we mentioned previously in the show, we have a special guest, Senator Greg Baca. He's from Valencia County and is newly elected as the minority leader of the Republicans in the state Senate there in Santa Fe. Welcome to Inside New Mexico, Senator Baca. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into this political job that you're in now.
Sure, and thanks for having me, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity. Well, a little bit about myself. I'm born and raised in New Mexico. I come from Belen, where I graduated high school. I'm a military veteran. I spent 6 years in the Navy during the Gulf War conflict. After that, I went to school. I'm a practicing attorney right now, and I've owned several different sorts of businesses at one time or another. You know, when you asked about why I thought I'd get into politics, you know, and it's kind of a, I don't know, I would say maybe a common story. I entered into law school and went through that, and I got out, and surprisingly enough, the job market in New Mexico instantly became a reality to me. I found out that here in New Mexico, you earn a little bit less, and sometimes the opportunities might be a little bit less. So I started looking at other areas of the country to practice in, and the thought came to me and my wife while we were sitting there talking one night, and we thought, you know, it shouldn't be that way, and it can be better. I believe that New Mexico can be just as good as any other place and even better than any other place in the country. And so with that, we sought to change things, and so I threw my hat in the political realm, and here I am.
For those of you who don't know, Michael Sanchez was a longtime figure in the New Mexico State Senate, was one of the leaders of the Democrat Party in the Senate. And Greg, you took him on. Was that 4 or 8 years ago that you took him on and defeated him and have been in the Senate ever since?
That was 4 years ago. So right now I'll be entering my second term, and it was quite a race. You know, I often look back at it, and I was, I would say, a healthy underdog in that race. He was the majority leader at the time and had a good deal of financing behind him. And looking back, I'm glad I didn't know all the numbers. I might not have ran.
Now, you had reported to me a couple of days ago that some of the anomalies that we're seeing across the country played out in your race. Evidently, you were leading by 20 points when we got to that 11 o'clock shutdown time that's now mandated in New Mexico law. Other places, it was against the law. They went ahead and shut down. But you lost 20 points during the time that they were shut down before the next morning. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
We were going through the night and the tally started coming in and being posted on our local news stations here. And we were tracking them minute by minute ourselves on the Secretary of State website. And, you know, I would say that about 60% of the votes were in at one point, and it looked to be that we were up ahead more than 20%. That lead held throughout most of the night. And then as we got closer later in the evening, I would say about 11 p.m. or so, a large number of votes came in all at once, and lo and behold, my percentage increase was only holding at 2% at that point. It seemed to be that there was almost 2-to-1 votes that came in from the period of time that I was up over 20 points to the period of time that I was only ahead by 2. It was a drastic shift and change than what I had seen in both the intermediary election and my last election, and watching other elections where you can track it throughout the race and it kind of tracks in a more typical sort of curve. But that night, it seemed to me that this abundance of votes came in all at once and almost overwhelmingly for, in my case, my opponent. And it just was surprising, and it seemed odd to me.
I will tell as a side note to our listeners that the Republican Party of New Mexico is deeply engaged still at this point in looking at these questions. We have begun to impound ballots across the state. I directed our executive director over the weekend to go ahead and impound those ballots, at least from Valencia County, and we'd like to take a closer look at that. So that action will be playing out in the coming week, and we just tell people stay tuned because we're not through looking at some of the anomalies that we're seeing across the country. So we're going to ask for a court order to get to view one of the machines in your area and just see if we can notice exactly how that vote total changed the way that it did. Now, we had spoken with Jim Townsend in the earlier section of this program. We had 101 candidates running for 112 seats in both the House and the Senate, 42 in the Senate. Tell me a little bit about how Republicans did in this election cycle in the state Senate.
Well, in the state Senate, we picked up two seats that were previously held by Democrats. It seemed to be that there was a battle that was ensuing between the progressive Democrats and those that were moderates. And the progressives were successful in accomplishing most of what they wanted and in the primaries eliminating a lot of their moderate Democrats. So what we wound up with was gaining two of those seats that they had lost to a progressive in the primary. And so we were happy to get those. One of them was a District 30, which was held by Clemente Sanchez and will be held by Senator-elect Joshua Sanchez, and the seat down south previously held by John Arthur Smith, which will now be held by Senator-elect Crystal Diamond. And so with that, we had Senator Payne, who retired this year, and so he didn't seek re-election, and so his seat was up for grabs in Albuquerque, and that seat, unfortunately, we weren't able to hold, and so a Democrat took that seat. And we also lost two incumbent senators, and Senator Gould and Senator Rue, up in Albuquerque as well. So in Albuquerque, we didn't have a whole lot of luck there, and so altogether, we ended up with a net minus one in the Senate, which makes our numbers now 15 to 27 Republican to Democrat, respectively.
One of the things that our listeners are interested in is the special session that just went on. Governor is struggling with the COVID situation, and she calls a special session. So tell me your viewpoint on what happened in that session.
Sure. I'll do that. I want to back up just a little bit to June's special session. You know, as we spoke briefly the other day, we had a bill for ballot applications to be mailed to every New Mexican that was registered to vote this past year. Initially, when that bill entered committee back in June, the proposed bill that was brought to us would have actually mailed ballots out to everybody that was registered to vote in the state of New Mexico, which means that there would have been not even an application process. A ballot would have just arrived at your house. And we could see exactly that that was going to be a problem. Talk about something being latent with issues and people having the ability to commit fraud on a very easy basis, I'll say. That was staring us in the face. Luckily, back in June, we were able to amend that, myself and another senator, to where it just mailed out the application. So at least we have that one added step of security where you have to mail in the application and then get the ballot. I think that's fraught with the opportunity for fraud if we go that way again. So I hope we don't see any proposals like that coming forward. Going on to the special session that just passed last week, basically that special session was held to disperse federal money, CARES Act money, to the public. It was about $331 million. And basically what was done with it was a portion of it was granted to unemployment to continue unemployment benefits. Another portion was granted for grants to businesses, and still more was granted to things like rental assistance and money for food banks and those types of things. Really, though, you know, all these solutions that we're talking about, in my opinion, are merely a band-aid. What we really need in this state is to get our economy back on its feet and get business rolling and get back to business as usual. That's really the underlying necessity here.
Folks, you've been listening to and we've been talking with Senator Greg Baca from Belen. He's the new minority leader in the Senate for Republicans.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for the opportunity today. And thank you as well for your service as chairman for the state.
Thanks.
I'd like to remind our listeners that if you'd like to get involved with the Republican Party of New Mexico, you could do that by going to the webpage at www.gopnm.org. The party also has a Facebook page and a Twitter account. The handle is at New Mexico GOP. You can call party headquarters at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill. We'll look forward to meeting with you again next week right here on Inside New Mexico.